Welcome to Resilience, Voices in Cybersecurity. The cyber threat landscape is constantly evolving and attackers' capabilities are growing in variety, volume and sophistication. This podcast will be your window into the latest strategies and trends on how to ensure your cyber resilience. I'm Jonathan Lipschitz, Director of Client Leadership at Cygnia, a leading cybersecurity consulting and incident response company. Each episode, I'll be joined by a thought leader in the cyber sector, sharing their insights, thoughts, and experiences. Enjoy the podcast. Welcome back, everybody, to the Resilience Podcast, Voices in Cybersecurity. Today, I'm very, very excited to have Javier Garcia Quintela, the CISO of Repsol, joining me for this discussion today. Javier, welcome.
Hi, Jonathan. Hi to all the colleagues listening. And thanks very much, Jonathan, for having this opportunity here to talk with you about cybersecurity. Yeah.
Thanks, Javier. And it's a pleasure to have you on. And it's really, really looking forward to our discussion. I want to ask you, let's start off with discussing, you know, your personal journey. Tell us about your personal role, what you were doing before cybersecurity, how did you get into cybersecurity? And let's start with who is Javier and what is Javier all about?
Okay. Well, thank you, Jonathan. Well, my personal journey to and how I finally reached to this position of CISO here in Repsol. I have a long experience and always in technology. Since the beginning, I am communications engineer, and then I work in different consulting and integrator companies. And since 16 years ago, I joined Repsol. And always working in different director positions in the IT department, and now the IT and digital department, in different experiences from strategy to architecture responsible, IT purchase, global operations and services, and so on, no? But I think that what gave me the, apart from the technology capability and the operations capability in order to be a CISO, the capability that I didn't have and I got it was the connection with the business, no? And the 2 years previous to be a CISO, I was out of the IT and digital department, working in the company, well, in a specific mission, setting the strategy for the services different units here in Repsol. No, that apart from learning a lot more about the business, it was a great opportunity for me to learn about all the stakeholders, the different relationships, and have those types of knowledge. And so after 2 years there, I had a conversation with my boss and I was appointed as the next CISO here in Repsol. That happened 4 years ago, more or less. So a background in technology, and in operations, that I think it is also very necessary in order to work in these cybersecurity positions, but also that business capability. You know, that we can talk later a little bit about how this CISO role and the challenges that regulation and how cybersecurity is evolving in the companies, you know, from this perspective. Yeah.
Javier. You know, one of the things that I've noticed, you know, working with you over the last couple of years is that you are amazing when it comes to building relationships and building bridges between people between departments. One thing we know, you know, cybersecurity leaders such as ourselves, we know that cybersecurity generally has an extremely difficult time with the relationship between IT, operations, cyber. It's normally a very, very tense relationship. Sometimes CISOs don't get it right. However, you particularly in your organization have got it right, and you've got it really right. You've really done an impressive role of building a very good connection between all these stakeholders that we've discussed. I mean, this is a major, major challenge. When you took arrived into this role, how did you, you know, build that position? How did you build those bridges? How did you build those relationships? How did you ensure that everybody could work together so well as they do today?
Well, I think that's an interesting question. I think that we all have listened continuously that collaboration is key in cybersecurity, public, private, between companies, between law enforcement agencies, between people, and so on. No? So, and if we believe on that, collaboration is even more necessary inside the company. Finally, cybersecurity, the function itself, can't implement and perform all the projects, services, technologies, also control measures in the users or whatever that need to be implemented in order to have a proper cybersecurity level, no, posture. So for me, collaboration is key. I think that this is not a novelty, and a lot of colleagues can agree on that. So it is one of my main priorities. Cybersecurity is a governance function at its core, but I understand the governance not like ruling or stating what need to be done in the company or the measures that the users need to accomplish, but influencing all the different stakeholders, people, different units, and so, and understanding that everybody has different perspectives. No? So respecting that, I try to explain the different measures. Sometimes I don't succeed on that, but on average, I devote a lot of effort to explaining the measures, understanding the other perspectives, understanding the different objectives that the different people on the table can have when I try to deploy some cybersecurity control or measure or restriction or whatever. Also, trying to stress the flexibility that we can have from the cybersecurity perspective, because finally Repsol is a multi-energy company. We sell energy, we don't sell cybersecurity. So we are here for the better performance of the business. No? So being very aware of that, I think that a relevant amount of time in my agenda is allocated to, in different ways, building relationships with the infrastructure operations, with the rest of IT and digital colleagues, but also more and more connected to the different businesses, corporate areas, geographies, people, and so, and trying to open channels in order to receive feedback and to explain the different cybersecurity measures that we are implementing. So that is a key idea for me. I have, when I arrived to this CISO position, I didn't have clear a lot of things, because after 2 years in the business, as technology and cybersecurity evolved so fast, I had to catch up, no? But one thing that I have very clear from the first minute that I arrived to the position was that collaboration is key. And we all are here to protect Repsol with the same objective and grow our business and the company. So understanding that, then it is a continuous effort, sometimes better, sometimes worse. But on average, I think it is good. And it delivers results. Trying to collaborate and explain and connect more and so on. So we multiply per three the level of projects, activities, and different tasks that we were able to accomplish when I arrived. No, because there was a key message at the beginning. The only head to be cut is mine one. So I have the responsibility for cybersecurity. For the rest of the team and the rest of the colleagues here, I ask them to perform the better. No, so having clear that, I think that you open a lot of relationships there.
Yeah, and I think you're 100% correct. There's a couple of key points you've said, and I see it all the time. To have a half-functioning, effective security team, the first thing is communication, 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 and collaboration. If you don't communicate, you don't collaborate with the other teams within your team, outside of your team, on all levels, and rightfully, as you said, explaining what you're trying to do and realizing your role within the business as being a business enabler. Someone you understand at Repsol at the end of the day is an energy-driven company, is got goals, has got a responsibility to stakeholders, has got an end of the day there to do a specific role. And cybersecurity teams need to ensure that they can enable the business to operate. So, you know, it's having strong teams, strong collaboration, and being a business enabler and having that mindset with your teams and with everybody around you really leads to a very successful cybersecurity team. Kabir, one of the things that is really difficult all over the world is, and especially in the energy sector, when it comes to cybersecurity professionals, is the lack of skill. In fact, I saw an article saying that there's about 3.5 million positions unfilled in cybersecurity due to the lack of skill. How are you addressing this particular problem within Repsol?
Well, yes, Jonathan, you are right. No, I think that the lack of skills in cybersecurity is not a novelty. I think that we all suffer that situation in some way. In the energy sector, we have an additional lack, no? Because, just to explain it a little bit, Repsol, in terms of IT model, we have an amazing percentage of our information in systems running in different clouds, no? So we are talking about cloud. So we are talking about cloud cybersecurity, that it is an additional challenge to find people and capabilities around that. And also we are an industrial company. So all things related to OT cybersecurity, OT capabilities, and OT cybersecurity capabilities is an additional challenge there. No? We suffer from all of that. Our sourcing model and people model is that we are a reduced number of Repsol employees, and then we take advantage of a different number of companies with different capabilities and commodities and very, very specialized. And so, all kind of a mix that you can imagine and you know, obviously. Having all those companies, partners working with us, mitigates a little bit our people, Repsol employees working in cybersecurity. We have to make everything 100% internally. It is impossible. We have a lot of lack of people there. Also, more and more, we are opening to whatever creative way of working with people, 100% from remote, whatever type of different collaboration, no? We struggle a little bit in order to speed up the when we hire selecting and hiring people, but fortunately, when they work for Repsol, Repsol is a great company to work, and I think that we have an amazing project here in cybersecurity. Fortunately, as I said, we have a very, very reduced rotation level of the people, no? So we can maintain them in the company. They can develop their professional capabilities, and also we try to have very innovative approaches to different things and technologies and so. So it is a very interesting environment for a cybersecurity professional to work, no? So that is the way we try to deal with this, no? In terms of we work with a huge number of different contractors, companies, partners, whatever. And also we are internally, we are incorporating people to the team, and also we try to build here a very challenging and innovative and a very good environment for a cybersecurity professional to develop here. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's, you know, cybersecurity professionals are like, you know, you and I both come from the technical background. You know, and in our younger years, I'm sure in my younger years, we used to like to play with technology. We used to like to work with the greatest and the latest and see how things work. And, you know, that's how cybersecurity, you know, professionals are today. They want to be at the forefront of technology. They want to be able to play with things. And what you're saying is create an environment where the professionals want to be part of. They want to come and be involved in that organization that's using technology, that's working on the edge, that's using things in a novel way. And it creates an excitement about the environment and be part of the company and the organization, not only just, you know, the organization, but also being part of the cybersecurity organization wanting to be part of it because they're doing very, very exciting things in a novel way. Also, you know, the use of companies, which you guys do very well, yep, is across the globe. You know, yep, today, sure, cybersecurity, and I speak about this quite a bit, cybersecurity is a global problem. And we live in a global world today. So there's no reason why you have to focus on using only professionals or companies or skill within one country. You can use professional, yep, skills, yep, and professional across the world. And that really will make a cybersecurity organization very, very strong.
Yes. As you said, Jonathan, both here, national Spanish companies, that it is where the place we have the headquarters, but also international collaboration, it's our daily basis there.
Javier, what do you think the cybersecurity threats or the threats that are affecting the energy sector are today? You know, there are lots, but I think what are the main ones that, you know, when you look at the energy sector, this is what you're really concerned about today?
Well, good question. Well, in terms of threats, I think that we all are facing, no matter the sector, an amazing challenge, that it is the growing number, exponentially growing number of threats and activity of the threats. No, no matter if they are in the energy sector, we suffer for a lot of cases similar threats as whatever other sector, no? And with all the levels of possible sophistication that we all can experiment, no? So I think that one key point is the amazing number of threats and the growing number of activity. The activity now is very intense, but it is going to grow. I think that we have to have clear that. And then specifically for the sector, I think that we suffer all the threats and risks related to, like, other company, to ransom, data breach, and whatever other possible threats, but also as we have relevant OT environments, we also have that addition of all the threat actors trying to target OT environments, whatever the technique they use, no, trying to target the OT environment directly if they can, or through our IT or cloud systems, and so I think that the difference between, for instance, the energy sector or the banking sector, for instance, or whatever, is all those OT environments. Then we suffer all possible threats that we all can imagine. ransom, insider, OT ransom, different types of data breaches, if possible, and phishing, fraud, well, everything there, no? That's not...
That's very interesting. And, I also see that when it comes to, you know, the World Economic Forum, that they're placing cybersecurity, you know, as number four in their short-term list. So it's something that really, one needs to be careful of. And as you say, it's coming at you from all sides. You know, from the cloud, from the OT, from the IT side, from the email side, all vectors are really, really, it's coming, it comes at one at quite a high speed. Now, I want to delve a little bit into and take this opportunity, because, you know, you've mentioned a few times is OT. Just for everyone, let's see, I want to just explain, I'll just go through a quick explanation of what OT is. So when we talk about OT, we're talking about operational technology, which is made up of industrial control systems, or otherwise known as ICS systems, plus the supervisory control and data acquisition systems, otherwise known as the SCADA systems. And if you put that all together, then, you know, you're talking about OT. And OT is really what is controlling, let's call it machinery, processes. One of the most simplest forms of OT that many, many people are used to and know about is, a time clocking system or card entry system, where is a piece of software and a controller that is talking to the door. Mechanism where you scan your card, it says, you've arrived, and creates a bit of information about you, stores it, runs some rules to make sure you can get through the door. So that's on a very, very simple level. But when it comes to the energy sector, to what you're dealing, you give us a little bit of insight into what kind of, you know, OT systems, the complexity that you're actually dealing with.
Well, I think that we have all types of complexity, no? In the Repsol is a multi-energy company. We originally were an oil and gas company, and with all the covering all the oil and gas value chain. That means from exploring for oil and gas, transporting, and then all the downstream activity, refining, chemicals, gas, and so, and finally selling products, for instance, in the petrol stations, and so. And in addition to that, as we are fully committed with the energy transition, so the company is transforming since we launched this commitment. I think it was in 2019 or around that year. So nowadays. 5 to 6 years ago, and we have very aggressive objectives there in our commitment. We have a very fast growing renewables power business, and also investigating and researching and implementing whatever possible source of low carbon or neutral energy. No, that means green hydrogen or whatever source there. So I think that we have, for instance, for a petrol station that we can, we all know what a typical petrol station and with an OT, simple OT system just to control the different pipes there serving the cars. And so that's an easy environment. On the other end, we have a refinery, for instance, that it is an amazing facility, industrial one with a lot of industrial process with very critical. Now they are subject to since years ago to national critical infrastructure regulation in a lot of countries, and so on, where they are working thousands of people. And performing critical activities, no, and there is that operational technology OT environment supporting all that, no. And for instance, in the renewables power business, with the winds, the wind mills, the dams, or the photovoltaic, and so sometimes all those are more isolated facilities with also with some. OT environments in remote locations. So I think that we have all the flavors of possible OT and all that complexity. For me, the OT environments, the basic architecture of an OT environment is fully segmented and disconnected from the rest of the company. And from the cloud and from whatever other possible source of connectivity or whatever, no? But that is what there is an architecture model, the Purdue model, that the basic fundamentals. I think that they were designed in 1992, and you can imagine, Jonathan, that in 1992. There were no cloud, almost no internet like now, and no systems like now, and also even no artificial intelligence, the promise that we have, or 5G or whatever, no? And with the energy transition, the pressure in order to transform and make more innovative and efficient, and also to introduce new sources of producing and generating energy is amazing, no? And that competitiveness came from connecting those facilities and OT systems to the cloud, to moving information, to use data lakes and artificial intelligence, and then bring intelligence and more knowledge to the operations in the industrial facility. And so I think that is the future, no, for and the present and the future for that. But that opens an amazing challenge also for cybersecurity. So the complexity of the OT environment nowadays is growing exponentially due to all these reasons.
Yeah, I mean, you've mentioned, as you say, you've mentioned all sorts of types of OT. You guys are dealing with every single one of them, and then the Purdue model, as you mentioned, became very popular. I think in the 2010 roundabout, they became very, very popular. Total segmentation, of the OT environment and deal with it like that. But then you also mentioned that today with AI and also modern OT systems who need to be connected or where we can gain efficiencies in connecting to the cloud, the Purdue model becomes a little bit of a challenge. And we want to, when a factory floor manager comes to you and says to you, look, we'd like to, we can do things 10 times faster or 10 times more efficient or cost effective if we utilize a new technology, a new automation tool, et cetera, et cetera. that could give us information with better information, but there's a problem. It needs to be connected to the cloud. What is your initial sort of reaction when you hear this from business? Keeping in mind that cyber is a business enabler.
Well, we have to go back to the beginning of this conversation about collaboration. And having clear that the company needs to advance and the business needs to advance and be competitive and lead the energy transition and so on. No? So my first thought is that. Otherwise, if my first thought is cybersecurity, maybe the situation is other. So then, we try to find solutions and to get a balance between the request from the business colleague and so and the cybersecurity control and understand there is no single solution for anything. And you have different degrees of cybersecurity levels and so you have to analyze all those possibilities and trying to find the solutions for that. No, sometimes it is modifying, being flexible in the cybersecurity control, but also with a balance of the technical architecture that they want to implement and the operational process also, and trying to between all of us trying to come to a solution for that business request for the moment. But sometimes it is a real challenge, honestly.
Yeah, definitely. And the challenge becomes, with the Purdue model, we were separating IT networks from OT networks. OT networks totally isolated. And with some of the modern stuff, as you know, we were speaking about now and challenges that business want to overcome, sometimes we've got to sort of have an IT-OT network, and more of a holistic kind of security needs to be applied. I've seen that in my line of work, we've seen attacks where, and not one, but many, where a threat actor begins within the IT segment and eventually pivots to the OT segment. Even if they are on separate domains, we've seen this being done where there's totally separate IT, totally separate OT domains, with the firewall, et cetera, in between, and threat actors have been able to go through. And what I've noticed in looking at a lot of these types of attacks, that a lot of the time, it's not the OT that was actually the OT, it was the problem within the attack. It was actually mistakes made in misconfiguration. For example, we saw an attack where they moved from the OT to the IT, so IT to the OT network, and they were able to make this jump through a jump server where one of the IT people happened to leave by error the username and password to the firewall management interface. And from there, they were able to just seamlessly walk from the one network to another. So it wasn't that the fact that there was a controller or something within the IT environment that allowed the attack. It was actually just misconfiguration or mistake that someone's made. And that is important to keep in mind. So it's not necessarily, yes, we need RCS security, which is we need to secure the industrial control systems. We need to secure the SCADA systems. That's part of security and secure the whole OT side, but as well as we have to make sure that we have to know that it's not necessarily just because it's an OT network that creates the problems. It's sometimes it's misconfiguration of things that creates problems, and threat actors are able to take advantage of that. I want to jump to something and ask you a question, something that you raised a little bit earlier. And that was, you mentioned regulation. You mentioned that the energy sector is highly regulated and considered to be an essential and critical infrastructure. Now, this, although it's a lot of words to say, I'm sure this gives you a lot of keeps you out of bed at night. because there's things called NIS2, which came out and you know is causing waves around, across Europe. And in the US, we've got the SEC cybersecurity you know regulations, which is also causing ripples across the US. You know, how does this affect the energy sector? How is it affecting your life on a day-to-day basis?
Well, regulations, the ones that you mentioned, the NIS2, the SEC rules in the US, also the NERC, and well, and a lot of different regulations, sometimes very similar in different countries. Repsol operates in 20 countries. So we are subject to a lot of different regulations and a lot of different regulations in cybersecurity. And this regulation effort is growing. And I think that sometimes the regulation asks you to implement tough controls. So you have to find the ways in order to implement that. But for me, the main shift in cybersecurity with the SEC rules, NERC, and NIS2 and others is the responsibility in the company, no? And the awareness in the company. You know that those regulations are asking for more responsibility and accountability of cybersecurity incidents and the proper management of cybersecurity risk at the board level. No? So I think that is transforming cybersecurity everywhere. No? If I think in my role, in my experience in this last 4 years as a CISO here, at the beginning, my allocation of time in my agenda was mostly oriented to project risk management and oversight, and to security operations, and to technical decisions, and people management, and so. And I think that now it has been transforming, and now I had to make room more time and personal time allocated to reporting to the board and to the governance bodies of the company, stakeholder relationship inside and outside of the company, and also a much more predictable and not non-technical reporting of the cybersecurity performance, no, in order to be understood by the boards of the company, governance bodies, sometimes authorities, and so. So I think that regulation is changing the impact of cybersecurity in the companies, and I think that it is changing in an effective way. Every time here in the company that I have to report on or I have to deliver whatever talk or explanation or to talk with somebody about cybersecurity, everybody is very, very serious around this and understands the risk. And maybe not the technology side of all the things with the great complexity that has the cybersecurity for that, but I think that the role of the CISO is transforming in that way and very fast, I think. Yeah. So yeah. Regulation is having a relevant impact there. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's done from the side of being good, you know, it's got cybersecurity in the boardrooms. People are talking about cybersecurity in the boardroom, regulatory bodies. That's very, very important. Mm. On the other side of the role of the CISO, it's put a lot of pressure on CISOs now, because not only you had to do your old job, you've got a new job as well to do. And that's
I think that you have to evolve from pure technical and operations and to continue with that, but complementing it with business board reporting, stakeholder management, risk management, and so that having that conversations. Yeah.
And as long as, you know, it results in the end of the day in better cybersecurity for the organizations and in practical terms, then I think these regulations are fantastic. They're good, they do a result. If it doesn't result in changes on practical terms, you know, then it's a problem. Then it's just, you know, eating time that should be used to practically resolve problems. Because in the end of the day, the truth of the matter is a threat actor and attacker is not interested in whether you've submitted your, you know, your latest report to the regulatory board or whether you've had a discussion with the board. If the threat actor sees a vulnerability that he can exploit, he will. And the paperwook is not that interested in it. Mm. Though, so it's important. Yep. So as long as these regulations result in practical change on the ground and don't just tar people up with paperwork, good people, cybersecurity professionals with paperwork, and I think they'll be great. And I think they'll start to make a difference slowly. And as you said, it's about accountability in the end of the day. The more accountability and you hold someone accountable for something, hopefully it results in real changes. Kabir, you know, we'll wrap up in a few minutes, but we can't stop any cybersecurity conversation or any conversation in terms of digitalization today without speaking about a little bit about AI. Within the energy sector, before we get into cybersecurity, you know, I know the energy sector has been playing with AI, has looking at it quite seriously. Where do you see, just in terms of the energy sector, what role that AI could play within the sector? And then others, let's discuss a little bit about cyber.
Yeah, well, we all in this period of time, we all are listening a lot of things about AI, no? And I think that we all are experimenting or working in with more or less intensity with different AI possibilities in the energy sector. It is a competitive advantage now, as in other sectors, no? To increase personal productivity with the daily things that we can make in order to search for information or analyze things or building documents or summarizing things or emails or whatever, and also to optimize the operations. Obviously, if you can analyze more data and introduce AI there in order to build more effective decisions and better decisions, and so right. So that is other opportunity. Also, here in Repsol, in the first digitalization wave of the company that began in 2018, 2019, around those years, we place a significant effort in order to become a data-driven company. So we have an amazing amount of data that with AI you can analyze it better for optimizing operations, taking better decisions, business decisions, and so I think that there is a lot of opportunities around AI in the business, both in the commercial processes or decision making processes, but also in the production and operational processes around that, and the personal productivity of all of us. Yeah.
And I think, like, if you look at an organization such as yours, as such as Repsol, with a very, very heavy OT practice, I think AI, and, you know, with thousands of data points, you know, being collected with thousands of the different data points very quickly, a lot of data being generated per second, AI could definitely play a major, major role in analyzing their data quickly and efficiently to see whether there's, you know, any cybersecurity or security risk that has been introduced by abnormal behavior or by seeing a messaging that shouldn't be going across that particular line, and be able to make those decisions quickly with that massive amount of data, instead of having to wait for a human being to look through it, to take time to make a decision. Hopefully we'll see in the near future that AI will definitely play that role. Javier, it's been amazing to talk to you today. And I really look forward to further conversations with you, and also you carry on our work we're doing together. Really, it's been fascinating to see how you run your teams and how you manage relationships and collaboration within your teams and operationally as well. So it's really, really been a wonderful pleasure.
Thank you, Jonathan. It was also a wonderful pleasure for me to talk with you and have this conversation about cybersecurity that also was very, very interesting for me. Thank you very much.
Only a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Resilience, Voices in Cybersecurity. Please follow or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts to stay updated on the latest trends and guidance in cyber defense.